Previously on Ex-Wives Undercover. In the last episode, Carrie gets the surprise of her life when she learns David's whereabouts and connects with his wife in Canada. And after comparing stories, the two women are dumbfounded how he had pulled the wool over everybody's eyes as he started fresh in a new country using a fake name that belonged to his best friend. In this episode, David gets detained by ICE and eventually shipped back to the U.S. only to do what narcissists do best, wreak havoc in the court system against his victims.
And so, I mean, he's just went from, we've had this happy marriage, and then, well, I've started getting mean, to just absolutely flip the script. I don't know this person at all. It's like he's suddenly lost this control, and there's no way for him to get it back except for to harass.
Welcome to Ex-Wives Undercover.
Liars, cheaters, and love cons.
I'm Amber.
And I'm Athena.
First, we told our story, and now we're sharing all of your craziest and most heart-wrenching stories of love gone wrong. Sometimes we laugh.
And sometimes we cry.
But more importantly,
we stand together. All right, girl. You ready to do this?
Let's do it.
The views, information, or opinions expressed on our show by our guests are solely the views of those individuals involved and by no means represent absolute facts. Opinions expressed by the host and guests may change at any time. Our podcast and YouTube show may at times cover sensitive topics, including but not limited to suicide, abuse, violence. Listener and viewer discretion is advised. Season 5, Episode 4 of Carrie's story, The Fleeing Felon. Prior to being deported back to the United States, David was held in a detention center where he now viewed his wife, Mary, as the enemy.
Like, I don't understand the motivation or the goal for the constant harassment and the legal harassment, but all of this started when he was in holding from the immigration center, right? So he would call her daily, you know, and was harassing her. And when he couldn't get what he needed from that, he would call members of her family. He would call their friends and neighbors that she had done this to him. She had called immigration. She had known the whole time that he was not there illegally or that he was not there legally. And he couldn't believe that she would do this to her. And he actually got some of their mutual friends like on his side. And I'm thinking, there's no way as a mutual friend that I could be okay with the fact that this guy had been my friend for all these years and was lying to me too with a fake name, you know? So how he was able to convince them that this was all okay and it was just a total misunderstanding was really blowing my mind. And so he was in detention when she reached out to me, and it didn't take very long before she had finally just gotten so frustrated with him one day that she said something to him about his other kids and called them by name. Why don't you tell me about, and then called my kids' names. And like she said, he just turned white, like on the video call, like you could tell. And so then he started telling his friends their mutual friends that he would call from the detention center that I was this crazy woman in the United States. And like, I was getting him confused with the real Brad because he was the father of my children. And like,
oh my God.
Like, and I think that all the stories really start falling apart when they're really recent. You know, like he does a really good job managing the lies from old stuff because it's probably been pretty consistent. Like, once you tell that story to one woman, then you tell it to another woman, you know, and he may be believing some of this stuff on his own. But it's the new stuff that really got him messed up because there's been so many different stories of our history that he's told to several different people that just don't even follow each other at all. But he would harass her from the detention center. He would harass her family.
He was accusing Mary of having you file for the child support. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. He thinks she was the only reason that you decided to, you know, go back and cross your T's and dot your I's and all that. And then he was threatening to find you And like now, did you hear from him at that point before he got extradited? Was he threatening you or like when he came back? Because it says he was threatening to find you and your dad was afraid he was going to hurt you. So he notified the sheriff.
Yeah.
And he was calling your son the boy.
Yes. Well, I think all that was from the detention center, because as soon as she lost her temper with him and called out my kids' names, then it was, oh, well, she had Carrie go back and file for child support. Like that would have never happened had she not told her to go do that. And she's just trying to hurt me by having her go after the child support, which is like, I had no control over the child support anyway, because it was still an open case here from when he was here before. And so when he was put back into the system here as a prisoner, I guess, then that automatically flags that court case that was technically still open, the child support case that was still open because he wasn't paying it. So like there was nothing I could have done to start or stop that.
So what? So what if Carrie or Mary urged you to file child support for your children that the biological father is not helping to care for? Good. I mean, it's just there. He's grasping at straws. It's so ridiculous. He's backed into a corner and he's just stirring up trouble because they can never accept any responsibility. And it's just such a silly thing to even like waste time creating drama about. But, you know, those type of people do those exact things. So,
well, it reminds me of our Ben too, because now it's like, I'm going to sue you. I'm going to sue you for filing for child support. And it's like, what? Are you delusional? Like, what are you talking about? And like,
And how I brainwashed everybody. It's like Mary's now the brainwasher. Yes. She made Carrie do these things.
Like, yes.
Nobody can make another adult do anything they don't want to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially one in a completely different country.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, I'd be on fire though to like, he's put you through hell enough and then to distance himself, I suppose, like so much by calling your son together with him, the boy, I would lose my shit. Oh, like how dare you?
It was like he couldn't remember his name, but it's maybe because he's got so many kids running around. He was not sure, you know, who he has kids with where or what their names were. Like, I can't keep it straight. Which kid belongs to which wife at this point? Like, right? I don't know. We had to have a chart. But he did the same thing. He did a lot of like, I'm going to sue you for this. Or like, I think that I understood that he had called the police in Canada to report Mary for harboring a fugitive and committing fraud, right? Okay. Because he was the fugitive. Like,
oh my God. So what? This is totally what our husband would have done too. Like,
I know.
I'm going to jail. You're going to jail, right? We're all going to go to jail. Like,
we're all going to jail. That's exactly.
You're going to jail.
You're going and you're going. I'm taking everyone down.
All right. Right.
Oh my God.
The stuff that he started with me was that I was defrauding him trying to get this child support because the child wasn't his child. And listen,
it kills me.
As much as my child has no desire to have anything to do with him, he looks exactly like him. Like, those genes are so strong. All of his kids look so much alike. He can't look at them and deny any of them. Oh. All of this was brought up when he filed for custodial rights of his children in Canada. And he went before the judge and he asked the judge to have a restraining order to prevent me and her from talking. And the judge was like, I don't care who she talks to. He was very adamant that I shouldn't be allowed to talk to her because she was just getting all this information. I'm like, well, yeah, that's what happens. See, it all finally catches up to you and people start sharing this information. This is reality.
On December 3rd, 2020, David was found guilty on 4 counts of felony theft of property and ordered to pay restitution. He was ordered to pay $216,000 and would be on supervised probation for 5 years. At 50 years old, David lost everything and was now living with his parents.
I think that all the court stuff is probably just as fulfilling that need for attention as having all of the girlfriends and all of the relationships, because it's causing all the drama for everybody else. He pled guilty to 4 counts of theft of property, totaling almost $500,000, maybe just over $500,000. All of the counts were not all of the charges. So I feel like probably some of the folks that he had stolen from were probably not around anymore to continue mm-hmm. the process, because a lot of them were elderly mm-hmm. when he was taking money from them. And so those were the counts that he had actually pled guilty to in order to get like probation and to have to just pay it back. So it was right. probation, restitution. And I don't think he spent any more time in jail after his sentence, which blew my mind, because you've got 4 counts of that. And I think they just dismissed the worthless checks and the fraudulent use of a credit card. And they certainly didn't hold him for any type of contempt of court for child support for me, or mm-hmm. for his first wife, for that matter.
So in total, so he's on Tuscaloosa's most wanted. He flees the country. He's in trouble with Canada. He's in trouble with the U.S. And he got 27 days and some probation. That's it.
That's it. He has to do probation for like 5 years. It's supervised probation. So he's got to check in with a probation officer. He's got to maintain a job, and he's got to make $200 a month payments towards the total mm-hmm. amount, which I think they ended up getting it down to like less than $250,000 of what he has to pay back, which is never going to make the people that he stole all that money from whole. You know, and by the time he
devastating.
Well, right. And there's 4 counts. And so if you're paying $200 a month total, that's $50 a month towards these people. Some of them had $100,000 loan, and they're going to get $50 a month back until when? Like, it's, it won't even touch
it'll
it.
It'll never. No.
Mm-mm. I had someone that was pretty high ranking say his attorneys are defending him like he's in the mob. Like, it's so intense. And like, why would you? And he literally, this was like a district attorney. And he said, like, I don't understand why anybody would be defensive of this guy. He's trash. And, you know, why is anybody going to all they could have taken all the money that they spent on attorneys and almost paid all these people back, you know? So why wouldn't you just do that? You know, you have these elected officials who take an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the state of Alabama, and then they recommend jail time for things that people have a constitutional right to do. And that's mm-hmm. coming from the politicians who are supposed to be upholding those rights for everyone. And they're just turning around and when it doesn't suit them, or maybe when their name is brought into it, it's, oh no, that's, you don't have any right to do that. You should go to jail for talking about your story because my name might be mentioned in that story. And so they're very much about protecting themselves. And it's really kind of terrifying thinking about, well, somebody could take, you know, $100,000 from me and they're going to float around for 20 years. And when they're finally caught, all the police are going to do, or all the prosecutors in the area are going to do, is they can give me $50 a month while he goes and plays golf every day and plays video games and does whatever he wants to do.
I thought about that yesterday. I had that exact thought. Like, look the severity and how much they stole. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the fact that he's not even serving time. I mean, what is that? What kind of example does that set?
I think the hardest thing to swallow is the fact that there are so many people that they arrest on a regular basis for not paying child support. And I'm talking about, you missed a month of child support, you missed $300, $400, and you missed 2 or 3 months, we're going to arrest you and put you in jail. This guy cannot make a payment towards any of his children for almost 20 years, and there's still no repercussions.
Once David returned to the U.S., Kerry felt the wrath of his presence immediately. With a child support order up in the air, David began relentlessly calling Kerry's parents with threats. Currently, he has filed a motion to set aside Kerry's divorce, claiming that he should not have to pay child support, and has fought it for over 2 years, spending thousands on attorney fees.
in order to avoid trying to make any payments or having the child support enforcement do an income withholding order and try to retrieve any money, the only way that they could think to try to stop that was to claim, clerical errors, And so after 20 years, it was 18. After 18 years, they filed a motion to set aside the divorce. So you can file those kind of motions within that first 60 days after you've been divorced. But this was 18 years later. And, if that was a real thing, there would certainly be a lot more people who were trying to file these motions to turn over divorces. But they're claiming that there was one form that wasn't filed properly or like something like totally stupid. They had an initial hearing and they filed a motion for discovery. What that looks like is a motion that says this woman should have to provide us with the following documents. We want the children's social security cards, the children's driver's licenses, a copy of the children's high school diplomas, and a headshot of each child. We need a copy of your tax returns for the last 5 years and a copy or a list of all of your financial assets. Not once in any of that did anybody say, hey, are these kids alive? Are they doing okay? Like, are they healthy? Are they well? Are they in college? Like, is there anything I should know? Everything that they demanded, he demanded through his attorneys, was everything that he might need to, do exactly like he just did and leave the country under somebody else's identity. So, of course, the first thing I'd do is go to court and beg the judge, look, this is what he just got out of jail for. This is what he was just extradited for. He was there underneath someone else's social security card and driver's license. Like, you can't just give him my children's documents like this. And she agreed. And she told the district attorney to file a protective order to keep him from obtaining those things. And then they filed discovery with the state of Alabama to try to get copies of the birth certificates after that. So I still don't know if they ever actually got them or not. Then they demanded that they have a deposition. None of this is really relevant because you can't like change the child support amount after the children have aged out. I think the judge didn't really know what was going on. The judge recused herself and another judge was appointed.
Why?
And I'm not really sure.
That's weird.
I don't really know. But then the next judge that was appointed had to recuse himself because his wife was the attorney, was my attorney in the original divorce. Oh. And so they were complaining, saying that the paperwork wasn't done correctly. And it was the judge's wife that had done the paperwork. So he had to recuse himself. And then another judge was appointed. So right now, it's currently sitting with that judge, and they filed to have a deposition, and they wanted to question me, which is, whatever. It's just a waste of time, but okay, fine. So he didn't show up. He has yet to show up for any of the hearings. You think that's going to be a really scary thing, and you get really nervous going into something like that. And then you realize that these people have no idea what's going on. They have no idea who they're dealing with. And she was asking me some of the stupidest things. Like, and she honestly, honest to God, said, well, when David moved, did you not try to find him to remind him that he owed child support? And I think I sat back and I looked at her and I said, I think what you mean is after he fled the country when he was out on bail, and what you're asking me is, did I try to pursue him when the police department had him on the most wanted list? Are you trying to figure out why I didn't have more means to find him than the police? Is that what you're asking me? Like, it was, her face was twitching by the time this thing was over because you could tell she had no idea. She would ask me things like, well, if he was so violent and he was so abusive, why did he have joint custody of the kids and why did he get standard visitation? And she had just laid the document in front of me, the original divorce decree in front of me. And I said, well, if you look at the document that you just had in your hand and read it, you would see that I have sole custody and all visitation was to be cleared with me first. There was no schedule. There was no appointed visitation because he didn't want them. He signed the papers because he just wanted out of there. He had a pregnant girlfriend waiting. But since that deposition, nothing has happened. And that was a year and 4 months ago.
And so what is the total amount? 1.5 million or something? Is that right?
It's 1.2 million. So the state adds interest and it compounds. Yeah. So you have like the basic child support amount, which is about $500,000, which is bad enough. But then the state adds, for a while, their interest rate was 12%. And so every time the year ends and you have this interest balance, it adds to the principal. So it compounds on itself. And so he owes as much interest as he does principal, really, right now. And I don't know the final number because I think the last number that I got was the $1.2 million in back child support. So I imagine anybody would want to get out of that too. But again, you've spent so much money on lawyers, you probably could have made a pretty big chunk towards it without having to do all this.
The first time I spoke to him, I blocked him. I was like, oh, it's just giving me a bad vibe.
So I walk in, my heart's like racing. And then he said, why don't you take my room? I won't do anything. I'm not that kind of guy.
I mean, I couldn't avoid him. Even when I would block him, there would be other accounts.
We had been together probably a good maybe 2 years. And then I got pregnant. And then it was like, now you got to marry this guy. Even with all of the red flags.
I knew the neighborhood where he was taking me to, so I knew if I had to make a run for it, I could get out of there.
You know those moments when intoxication turned toxic and you ignored your gut instincts. Love, Lust, Fear is a new podcast series exploring true dating and relationship stories. Every episode is an immersive experience of intimate moments, from first date dilemmas to relationship regrets. Exciting and insightful confessions about the confusion, disappointment, and heartbreak surrounding love and lust, where judgment can easily get lost in the haze of desire. I'm Jake Deptula, host of the Strictly Stalking podcast. I've spoken with over 100 survivors of dating and relationship trauma. Their advice? Trust your instincts. Love, Lust, Fear is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm curious, you know, you had dropped the child support or pursuing it at a certain point years ago because you were scared for your life and you were, he was threatening to kill you and whatnot. Was there any fear now that he was back, not in jail, that he would harm you? I mean, because you're still kind of going full force with it. And I'm sure over the years, you're just like, fuck it. I'm not, you know, mama pa tiger going at it. But I mean, and you're married now, so I'm sure you feel a little protected and you're not like alone. But is there any fear you feel like he's going to lose his shit and come for you physically, harm you or the kids or anything?
I think it's going to be a matter of time before he absolutely loses his mind and does something. I don't fear for my safety or for my life anymore. My kids are adults and they can take care of themselves. The first thing that my children did when they learned that he was coming back to the United States was get a concealed carry permit for a handgun. And they both carry weapons and I carry a weapon and I'm okay with that, you know? And you hate to have to do that, but when I say, you know, you have to do that for protection, we have a right to do that. And I feel pretty strongly about needing that right because of situations like this. I'm not going to be put into a situation ever again where I'm afraid for my safety.
Was there a time in those 16 years, I'm sure you didn't tell the boys when they were really young about their father. I'm sure you had to keep it on the up and up, but how much did you reveal? Was it in trickles? Do they know the whole story now? Or like, did you wait till they were adults, 16? Or like, how did that go? And do they just know who he is and everything at this point? you know.
They know he was not a great person. They know that he was arrested and went to jail, and they know that he skipped bail and left the country. They know now that he had several families, and they have a lot of half-siblings floating around in the world. My oldest, because technically he's not blood related, I don't know that he really cares. But my second oldest, my son, that is, David is his father, he will never let on how much it affects him. But I had a great conversation with his wife, and that was one of the first things that he had said to her was, my father is a psychopath. And if you don't want to date me because of that, because one day, I don't know, I might pass those genes on to children.
Oh, that makes me
right? And so he gave her an option. And I told her, I said, you know, it's so interesting to me because he is so not like there are little weird things that I'm sure come from him. But they're not scary things and they're not dangerous things. And because of the way that David was raised, my child was not raised that way. He was not put into situations where he was at risk. And he's not like him.
Yeah.
And so I don't fear for him in that way.
It breaks my heart that he fears that. Yeah. I never even thought about that. Like that, how a child might feel like, am I going to be like that? Is mm-hmm. am I, you know, going to turn out that way? That's heartbreaking.
Right. Well, and he doesn't think about it that way. I mean, what he doesn't realize is that David, I mean, he was in trouble when Mary's friend Jane was doing all her FBI level research. I started trying to help her dig in some of the court documents here because she just wanted to know if there was documentation for all of that. Well, when you look up his name or his social security number in the court system here, it pulls up stuff from the early 90s. I mean, he was right out of high school and arrested, right? So we learned that he had been arrested or had gotten into some really bad trouble either late in high school or right after. And he had moved to Arizona to live with his brother. And that while he was living there, he was arrested again because he was stealing mail out of people's mailboxes. And I'm pretty sure that's a federal crime, but I don't know the details of that. But that came directly from, you know, someone that he lived with there, that information. And then we pulled up court records from the 90s where he was arrested for forgery. And there was one where he was arrested for theft. And then one where he was arrested for failure to appear or not abiding by the terms of his probation. So this is not a new thing for him. And like my kid's never been in trouble. He gets on my last nerve sometimes, but
like all children,
right? Like all children, like that's his job, right? He's supposed to. But he's a good kid.
The judge's most recent order for Carrie and David is to mediate. The mediator can't get scheduled because she is under a federal investigation and has recently lost her very short stint on the Alabama Board of Pardons and Paroles for lying to a federal judge about the number of bar complaints she has received regarding her alcoholism. She also lied to the federal judge about the alcoholism after being featured in an article regarding her journey with drugs and alcohol. Needless to say, Carrie will not be mediating with her. It wasn't just Carrie battling it out with David. Mary was too. She was still reeling from learning that the man she had slept next to for 7 years was now a stranger. And now, he was demanding that she call him by his real name, David, and not Brad.
You know, he's arrested and it's just a very much, you know, a demand. And I've read emails from him and that's exactly how he speaks. He's so vindictive. He's so cruel in the way that he speaks to her, which was always the way that he spoke to me too. But it was very much I cannot believe that you would call me David. You know, I mean, that you would call me Brad. You know, my name is David and the courts have informed you that you should call me David and that my children should call me David. And their last name is going to be, you know, my last name now. And it's, you know, we're going to make sure that it's changed, but you'll be calling me David from now on. Like it's, and so, I mean, he's just went from, we've had this happy marriage and then, well, I've just started getting mean to just absolutely flip the script. I don't know this person at all. Like he's cruel and he's hateful and he's mean, but he is very demanding that he, since he can't see the children right now, that he have these video phone calls with them so many times a week. And if it doesn't go exactly the way that he thinks the call should go, then he loses his mind and sends these horrific emails about how inappropriate she was. And the children were not sitting in such a way that that the light was shining properly on their face and I couldn't see them and they should have been fed and all of their attention should come to me. And like, they should be focused for 30 minutes with me on this Zoom call. These are children that are under 6 years old. It's like he's suddenly lost this control and there's no way for him to get it back except for to harass. Right. That's the only thing that he can control now in this situation because he can't go up there.
I mean, what is the end goal for him? Does he want joint custody? And how? Like, he's not even the same. I'm confused. Like, what does he want? Like, he cannot go back to Canada. So is he trying to just be like, let's just wash that under the rug or sweep that under the rug and then we'll just pretend like nothing happened and we'll just do a little joint custody here and ship the kid. I'm so confused. Like, yeah, what?
Right.
What does he want to have happen?
He did file for joint custody and with a schedule that every time that they were out of school, they would be in the States and they would come here. And he even told the oldest child that he was filing for her to be a dual citizen so that she could come and live with him. Right. And so he was introducing her to all of her family members that she'd never heard of and never met, that he told her mom were dead. You know, I can't even imagine what that put them through. But he did file for joint custody. And like every summer holiday, mom would have a week and then he would get the remainder of the summer until they're 19. She had asked me if I would write an affidavit to explain my situation and what was going on in our case and that he had never been supportive of the children and things like that. And so I did so, and I was called as a witness in their court case. And I appeared via Zoom because he had to also appear via Zoom. And they elected not to ask me any questions. And the way that their court system works there, if his side doesn't ask me any questions, then she couldn't ask me any questions either because they could only use me as a rebuttal witness, right? Ask me rebuttal questions. And so because he didn't want his attorney asking me anything, then she couldn't have me go back and explain anything. So all that was put into the court system there was my affidavit. And she had other people who wrote affidavits as well. But in the judge's orders, the judge said, well, the ex-wife said this, but I didn't ever see any documentation that actually happened. So we're just going to pretend it doesn't, right? It was to the gist of that. And so, had they asked, I would have been happy to have provided all the documents necessary to show that was the case. He told the judge that he did not have a child support case. He did not owe child support, and he had not filed a motion to set aside the divorce. And I'm, holding a copy of it in my hand going, then why am I paying for an attorney, right? So, everything that he told her was easily proven to be false, but she didn't give them the opportunity to do so. And, all this stuff about, well, he, was living under a fake name was, well, he made these mistakes in his youth, but that doesn't affect the way that, he loves his children and the parent-child relationship that he has with his children. In the meantime, he's having these video calls with the kids. They've started seeing a psychologist because everything has been so horrific on them. The psychologist is testifying in court that there's big problems here in this situation. This is not okay. These kids are not okay for a lot of different reasons. And still the judge doesn't want to change anything. And not only do they have to have these regular video phone calls that are not working, you know, for the children, but also ordered a graduated visitation schedule so that even though he couldn't go to Canada, mom would have to bring the children to the United States to visit him here. And honestly, if it were me, there is no way in hell that I would ever follow that.
And on whose dime? Is she
on hers?
Yeah. Just a thought here. What about the fact that he's a felon? That doesn't, you know, register on his moral compass and his ability to make decisions on parenting. I'm a little dumbfounded.
Yeah, I was startled.
I think Athena was right previously. Like, I shouldn't be shocked, but I am. I'm like, how? Like, how do you not see the whole picture? And I feel like your case is different, but similar to ours, is like you're trying to pull all, like to paint the entire picture, not just this little piece of it, so that the judge can make an educated decision. But it's like they're shutting you down on every front. Like, don't you need to know how he's been with his previous children and his previous wife and this, that, and other? Like, don't you want to see the picture? I realize that there's a huge disconnect, and I'm sure the United States court system is not connected to the Canadian one, but like, do you want to see his years-long felony fraud, stealing, all the different things from his past? And wouldn't that equate to his parenting? Like, how do they come up with he's a good parent?
How about he left the country without telling anybody where he was going and lived under a fake ID for years? Like, that would be my first panic, would be, is he going to try to take my kids and go somewhere? Right? He threatened to do that with my children before, and that went into my affidavit as well. But again, it's like they just didn't even want to hear it. They didn't want to know. They didn't want to hear about his past because his, according to the affidavit that his mother filed into court, he had made several mistakes in his youth and deeply regretted them all, but he had vowed to be a better person moving forward. You know, so like that, it must be okay. We can completely overlook all of the terrible things, all the children he abandoned, all the felony charges, forgery and theft and, you know, spousal abuse, all these things. We're just going to overlook that because, I mean, he says he has a good relationship with his kids. So he must have a good relationship with his kids. How anybody could believe a word that came out of his mouth at this point baffles me beyond, you know, reason. But again, the family court system, obviously in Canada, is just as bad as it is here. My personal experience doesn't come from my experience. It comes from my husband's experience. But it is appalling how the family court system is run, to the point where some friends and I have, who are going through some similar things, have recently met with some politicians and members of the Bar Commission and the Judicial Inquiry Commission and the Court of the Judiciary and said, hey, these terrible things are happening in the family court system. And every other attorney that is not involved in domestic relations court here in Alabama says, that's not possible. That can't be happening. No, attorneys wouldn't do that. My husband and I had a prenuptial agreement written, and within just a few weeks after getting my financial information and his personal information and finding out that the reason we wanted a prenuptial agreement was to prevent his ex from having any access to me or my things or my children or any information about me, that attorney then turned and entered into their custody case as the mother's attorney. And proceeded during a deposition of him to pull that prenuptial agreement out, which was never filed in the court system. So it was a confidential document. She pulled it out during deposition and started asking him questions about it, passing it around the room. Right? So I filed a bar complaint against her. The bar in our local area investigated and said, yeah, the bar needs to prosecute her. This is a problem. They sent it to the people who were supposed to stamp seal, say, you know, hey, this is bad. What, we're going to take your license, whatever. They said, no, we don't see a problem.
Oh, and it's, my God. Unbelievable.
And that's just a tiny story. I mean, I had a friend who her ex's attorney walked up to her in a courthouse and spit in her face.
Oh.
After a hearing. It's so bad. It's to the point here in Alabama where a group of my friends have started a nonprofit organization called Support Children's First. And it's to help families who are going through family court and the corruption in family court, where these counselors and these attorneys and these judges are making terribly poor decisions. And we're just trying to support other families who are going through similar things and share information.
At some point, Mary actually reached out to the real Brad and asked how he and his wife felt that his name was on her children's birth certificates. His reaction was so appalling that we can't even repeat it here. All while his wife posts Bible verses on her Facebook page. Speaking of good old Brad, here's a little story that will give you an idea of his character. Can we say birds of a feather?
Did Brad ever press charges for theft identity?
So that's an interesting question, right? I don't know. I can't say for sure that Brad knew, but there had also been the real Brad had worked for David in the last few months of that business being afloat. And right. He had some sketchy situations in his personal life, but there's no way for me to know if Brad knew ahead of time. But I do know that once he got back to the United States, they have been playing golf together. David went and stayed with him and his new wife at their home. He painted their house for them.
I bet he knew. I bet he knew what he was doing. He probably was like, toss a little money my way. Go ahead.
Right.
But you get caught. I'll pretend I didn't know anything. I mean, I could see that shady business going down easily.
And plus, like, if his social security card and driver's license go missing, like, you know, he had to have known immediately where it went, at least.
Agreed.
And as far as I know, he didn't press any charges there.
Okay.
But I do know that Mary reached out to him on Facebook after he was on a video call with her children. He showed up with David on a video call and introduced himself as his name, which is what the children thought their dad's name was. So, right. So this is totally fucked up right there because, hey, children, I know that you've always known me as this name, but now here's my best friend. And that's actually his name. I mean, what do you
and
say?
And we have the same birthday.
And the same birthday, except for not really, right? So I do know that she reached out to him and asked, you know, how his wife felt about his name being on her children's birth certificates. And the response he gave is not really appropriate for me to repeat, but the gist of it is that he really didn't care.
Have you heard our podcast? Anything goes. No, I'm just kidding. No.
Right. Still,
again, just showing his true character that he's slimy.
So where is David now?
Okay, before we have final thoughts, do we know where Raven is these days? Is he still living with his family? Does he have a job? Does he have a girlfriend, a new wife, more kids? Like, what's he doing these days while he's still not paying child support?
Right. Well, you know, it's that we have some ideas. On a couple of video calls that he's had with his kids, he's been wearing a wedding band. So whether that means anything or not, you know, who knows? Even though he is on parole in the state of Alabama, I know that he has started another business in another state and has an LLC in that state. And that LLC has an address and a phone number associated with it. So I have a friend, it's in Atlanta, and I have a friend that lives in Atlanta. And so I called her and I was like, hey, Ash, I need you to do me a favor. And she's that friend that's up for anything. Like, she's like, well, do we need a shovel? Like, what do we need? Like, let's go. I love her so much. And so she, I said, I need you to call this company and I just need you to talk to this guy for a little bit because I need you to record it and I need to hear his voice. I need to see if this LLC and this information matches the person that I think it is. And she's like, hell yeah, let's go. So she calls him and talks to him for a while. And she's texting me and like the whole time that she's talking to him, she's like, this guy, like he won't shut up. First of all, I was like, well, that's, you know, red flag number one, that's him. Right. Cause he's going to try to sell it as much as he can. And so after a while she said, okay, is there anything else you want to know? And I said, well, see if you can find a way to incorporate Italy into the conversation. And she's like, but she's brilliant and she's amazing. And so she says, well, my neighbors and I are interested in the service that your business, you know, provides, but I really want to talk to my next door neighbor about it before I do anything. And right now they're spending their anniversary on a trip to Italy. And he like, oh my God, I used to live in Italy and blah, blah, blah.
That's the right guy. Ding, ding.
Boom, got him. Like, that's him. There's no doubt. And so then, even more recently than that, he started sending texts to Mary from the phone number that's listed on the business website.
Oh.
So,
wait,
I don't know.
Is this business insecurity by any chance?
It is not.
Okay, he changed professions.
He did change professions. Okay. It's still in a business that you go into people's homes. I just don't feel like anybody in that area is safe as long as he's running around. So I don't know what will happen with that. If he's not working, you know, I don't know how they're going to get any child support out of him. So I have to, you know, weigh the options to see what's the better thing to do.
Right. Because now that he's self-employed, he can say, I don't make any money. And
Right. Like, which we know is what they do.
Well, okay. We're not going to try to dox him or anything, but like if anything feels a little shady and you hire a person that might work on your home, maybe, and if so, like contact us, mm-hmm. just mm-hmm. like, we'll give you, you know, the heads up. But if, I don't know, just be aware of like, where's he at? North Carolina?
Atlanta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If you're in Atlanta area.
We need a billboard, right?
Yeah. We need like a 1-800 number for tips. Yeah, yeah. Like call us and we'll try to like.
If you receive this home service and the guy tried to get you to loan him money or invest in his business, call me at this number. Yeah.
No. Don't do it. Don't do it. Look under the, what's all the like contractors and things like that? They have to have like a business, certain kind of license number. Mm-hmm. Check the licensing. Really do your due diligence. Don't mm-hmm. fall for the cancer story.
Well,
don't send anything via PayPal or Venmo. Don't do that.
What's interesting is he did get the license.
Oh.
It's not something that you have to have a super big amount of training to do. So I'm sure mom paid for him to get this, you know, paperwork done. And apparently they don't background check, you know, for those licenses. So, you know, there we are.
How is Mary doing? I'm just trying to kind of tie up loose ends. How is she processing? It's been a couple of years now, right? Or has it even been that long?
So she first reached out to me in October, November, December of 2019. And so we've been talking for a couple of years now. Well, three years now. And we're in touch pretty regularly. And I think that's really important for us and our sanity. But I thought it was really important, even though I was kind of done with this situation, because I felt like maybe she could see that I got out and I was okay. And she will be, you know, and she's not right now, but she every day, you know, is a new day. And every day she gets a little better. And, you know, it's a hard thing to process, but I know that she has someone in her life that cares deeply about her, and she has her children with her, and she has her family support. She has a wonderful, wonderful family who is very supportive of her and very active in her life. And they're right there for her at any time that she needs somebody. And it's pretty wonderful that she has access to that and her friends. You know, she lost a lot of friends when this happened because he had them convinced that we were all the crazy ones. And you know how that goes.
Yeah.
But she kept a few that she'd had before. And, you know, and now she's made a new one, you know. And I've told her that, you know, my kids aren't really ready to meet new siblings. They don't, you know, that's not something that they ask for. But they might one day. You know, and I wanted her to know that I was always here, that, you know, I would help or encourage or whatever, just so that she would know that she's not alone. And that somebody else could hear the crazy and say, you know what, I totally believe you, because it happened to me too.
What would you say, like, the big learning moments were on your story and her story, and like the red flags and those learning lessons? I mean, obviously, you know, I could see some similarities, but you were so young too. Like, right. You, mm-hmm. It's hard to be like, well, I should have been looking for this, or I should have been looking for that. It's hard. It's hard to pinpoint those learning lessons, or even if it's just self-reflection of like what I learned about myself, having gone through this and made it to the other side. And, what would you say to that?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, when all this first happened, I was not encouraged to work through it, talk about it. My support system, even though they were there for the things that I needed and that my children physically needed, there's not a lot of, you know, you need to go to counseling. You need to figure out why this happened. It was very much a, you know, we're in the South. We're going to push this down. We're going to put on some lipstick. We're going to move on. And so I did that. And I did that for a lot of years. Wasn't really allowed to talk about it. Not allowed. That's the wrong word. But I wasn't encouraged to talk about it. And nobody wanted to admit that it happened. Everybody just wanted to put it behind them. Nobody wanted to talk about him. And I get that when the children that I had are young, especially because you just didn't want them to overhear anything. But like when I was in a long-term relationship afterwards, I was with someone who didn't want to know. Like they were aware, but didn't want the details. Like he just didn't want to talk about it. And that was hard too, because like it was valid. And there were reasons why I behaved a certain way in relationships. And it was because of that experience. And it was like, if you don't talk about it, then it didn't really happen. But then you're acting crazy because of this. Well, I'm not really acting crazy if you take into account the life that I just came out of. But he didn't want to talk about that. He didn't want to know anything about that. And that's kind of a hard situation to be in. But my husband has been with someone before who was like totally diagnosed, you know, with personality disorder, and has absolutely the same kinds of experiences that I have had. And sometimes we'll just sit and hash a lot of that stuff out. And we did that a lot before I started talking to you guys too, because, you know, you have to know why you're reaching out. You know, is it just to tell my story? Is it to try to find him or to cast him in a bad light? Is it going to be therapeutic for me? Is it going to drag up a bunch of bullshit? Absolutely. All of those things. Right. Yeah. But what's the goal?
Right.
Here?
Yeah.
And I know you guys probably did the same thing when y'all were taking this from, okay, this is our life experience and this is our friendship, to, hey, let's make this public for the world to hear about. That's a big,
I don't think we thought it through super well. We sort of jumped off the cliff together.
This would be the coolest shit podcast. Let's do it.
and then realized, dang, I just exposed all my most everything to the whole wide world.
Right. And you get so vulnerable when you're talking about this. And I think that's been a hard thing, but such a beneficial thing for my husband and I. And like, if David met me now, like for the first time, he would not know me. Like, that was not the person that I was. And I'm proud of that, really. I mean, it took a lot to get to this point, but I'm nothing like I was when we were married. And, you know, I'm really glad, because, I mean, it's not like I walk around going, oh, everybody's a narcissist. Everybody, you know, because I have a hard time with people who do that too. We just throw around that word, you know, like it's just not some major diagnosis. It's huge, but
I think we just want to hold on to, like, we just so desperately want to know, like, what was that? What happened? And when you hear that a certain medical term, you're like, yeah, that's it. That sounds like it. That mm-hmm. has to be. And so I think people just, mm-hmm. oh, he's a sociopath. He's a narcissist. He's a this, mm-hmm. he's a that, because it just makes them feel like validation of like, oh,
right.
all those symptoms. Yes. All the ones. Right. That's what he is. But right. you never know.
And some people who are kind of new to it, and they start saying those kinds of things. They say that without really thinking it through, and they use that as a, well, I must not have done something wrong. He's like this because he's a narcissist. Like, let's go ahead and admit that we made the choices that we made, you know, and they were bad choices. Everybody makes bad choices. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just being able to take a step back and say, you know what? I made a really bad choice, and I was young, and there were a lot of reasons why I made this choice. And in my mind, I was thinking this, or I was thinking that, but now I can look back on it and say, hey, that was a poor choice. And then you have people who truly really have, you know, these psychopath, you know, diagnoses, or like they're really legit. Like, just because somebody's mean doesn't mean they're a narcissist, but, truly, like there was a lot wrong with him, but there was stuff that was wrong with me too. And I think the growth that's come from my husband and I really sitting down and being able to be open and having somebody that's so supportive that maybe he doesn't like to hear what I went through, but he understands and he knows the need to, you know, the therapy that's involved in just talking about it. So I always laugh because I'm a counselor. I'm like, well, I'm not your counselor, but let's just have some therapy together. And it might involve margaritas later. So, you know, but we can get some of that off our chest. And that's been so empowering, really.
Yeah. I love that. I love to hear you talk about what was wrong with you, just like what was wrong with me. It's not like I'm victim blaming myself, like I deserved what I got, but I did make certain choices. But mm-hmm. how did I get to that place where I made that choice? Like, there had mm-hmm. to have been something. And, you know, when we re-edited the podcast, one of our listeners actually pointed that out, like, I'm not trying to like shame you or like why you chose Ben or this and that, but like, what led you down that path to be so vulnerable to someone like him? What was going mm-hmm. on? Mm-hmm. And then it was like, ooh, now I got to unpack that. Okay. Yeah. Like
one thing leads to another. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, you know, I hope this was cathartic for you in sharing, but it is, it's true. Like, self-reflection is a huge part of it too. And like you said, you can't go through something without coming out a different person and a stronger person and a more wiser person. And
well, but you also make that choice. You can come out of it and poor me, this True. Happened to me.
That's
or
right.
you can come out of it saying, you know what, I did this and now I'm going to change me and I'm going to be better and I'm not going to fall for this shit again.
Amber and I want to give a big thank you to Carrie for sharing her personal journey with all of us. We hope you enjoyed The Fleeing Felon. Can't get enough of Ex-Wives Undercover? If so, make sure to subscribe to our show so that you don't miss any of our exclusive subscriber-only podcast episodes. You can also follow us on Instagram and TikTok, as well as join our true crime community on our private Facebook page. And for those who rather watch the episodes, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel.
For more information, simply click the link found in each episode's show notes.